Dear listener, please note that this podcast is recorded during COVID-19, where we can't get into the studio and give you the quality that you are accustomed to. For any changes in quality, we ask for your apology.
Hello, and welcome to What's Love, the podcast. This is a podcast series brought to you by Zanga Zirugel, and in collaboration with the Soul City Institute for Social Justice.
The first time I only spoke to him once, and I think it was even 2013, not 2014. He told me that he wants to do, or he wants us to do a cooking show, dinner with Somizi or something like that. But I've never seen any documents. So it came as a shock that he sent me emails, which I don't dispute, but I've never opened a document or read an email. And anyone who knows me will tell you that I'm not an email person. I started even having an email again probably 2 months ago after like 5 years of not having emails. I've got a management team that deals with anything that is to do with emails. So if he says he sent it to my personal email, I never opened it. I did have an email address, but I've never opened a document or anything like that. And that is why it's something that never stuck or was at the back of my mind when the cooking thing happened. Because when he approached me, I never even thought I would want to have a cooking show in the first place, because I've always loved cooking, but I never thought I would take it to that level. So the cooking thing really started kicking in for me 2 years ago, I think, when social media started getting bigger and bigger. And then I decided about around February just after lockdown, that I'm going to have my own YouTube channel. And that is how the cooking show came about.
There you go. Welcome to yet another exciting episode of What's Love, the podcast. The voice that you've been listening to is that of our very famous celebrity, Somgaga, Somizi Mhlongo Motaung, talking about news that came out of newspapers and social media about his cooking show. So today I am joined by two guests who are going to help me unpack the issue pertaining this issue about the cooking show around intellectual property and trademark. And they are going to really help me unpack the issues. And first is the usual legal eagle, Tinyeko Mbenze. How are you, Tinyeko?
I'm good, thanks. And how are you, Lebu, and our guest?
No, I'm perfect. I'm perfect. Next is Mpho Gama, who is from the East Rand. He is currently finishing off his master's in intellectual property. And he is an analyst by day and a jogger and blogger by night. Welcome, Mpho. How are you?
Hi, Lebu. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for agreeing to be with us today. Now, guys, of course, we live in the world of social media. When this story came out, we were all very shocked because over the years, Somizi has built a name and a very illustrious character himself, and we absolutely were wondering what actually happened. I do know that some other people tweeted the emails, that were sent by Hastings Mueng, who basically says, this is what I pitched, this is what I proposed, this is what happened. And for me, as just the person who follows the news, they looked very similar. You heard Somizi, who really lives an amazingly cared for life, which includes not reading any emails, explaining what happened. Now, you know, this may be just an issue around Somizi, but it actually speaks about law. It talks about intellectual property protection. Many people who responded to the Twitter revelation were saying, well, cooking is not a new idea. There's been so many other cooking shows out there. So maybe let me start with you, Mpho. What are we talking about when we say this is my intellectual property?
Oh, all right. So intellectual property is a branch of law that ideally protects the manifestations of ideas. So it's mainly to drive innovation and give incentive for people to create, to enhance also society, and also they get something back from that. So usually we have four different branches of intellectual property. We have copyright, which protects creative works like your songs, your films, your scripts, movies and such. We have trademarks that protects brand names. You have patents, which protects scientific innovations. You know how the kettle is made or how the car is made. There will be patents. Then you have design. Design protects how the general product or how your phone looks, for an example. So intellectual property protection just protects the manifestation of people's, I guess, geniusness, yeah, or ideas. Yeah.
Okay, so the idea is that the idea does not necessarily need to be new. I mean, I think the patent for the drug for coronavirus or the vaccine will be new, but you are saying if I come up with an idea, Tinyeko, and I say, Tinyeko, let's do this, and it's my idea, it can be protected by this law.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Now let's get into this case. Hastings says he proposed in 28th of July. He ascertains it's 2014. So Missy says 2013. That let's do this cooking show. And as I said in my opening, it seems very similar. There's such subtle
differences. Yeah.
I'm asking this question because we are all living in a highly creative world. You know, I sit in a meeting and we discuss ideas. I see government has advertised something. I submit a proposal and many funders. So this world of people sharing and sending their ideas to somebody, whether they are sending it to a producer, and I'm sure anybody who works in media can say, there's been many proposals for shows. I certainly have seen some in my own, life. And I've also submitted some.
Yeah.
What should people do to protect their rights? I've heard other people say you email it or you post it to yourself. But in this case, it looks like Hastings Mueng's documents are intact. He can say, I spoke to you and I sent this through at this date. There is an email to prove that. Let's forget whether or not Somizi 5 years ago read emails. But I'm simply saying he did all of that. Was there anything else that Hastings Mueng should have done at that time to protect his creative idea?
Yeah. So I think the most simplest way or the most direct way he could have protected his idea is through non-disclosure agreements. That's how mostly creative who haven't gone to market with their ideas, that's how they can get some sort of protection when they pitch to, producers or to the station or funders. That is one way of protecting your idea. But I think I just also like to make something clear, especially for copyright. So this matter is is complicated in twofold. So how I'm saying this is that copyright doesn't protect ideas, but it protects the manifestation of ideas. So if I come to you and say, Oslebu, I want to write a song. The song is about love, walking down the street, whatnot. And you take that idea from our discussion and you you make the song. You record the song, you write the lyrics, you record the song. The copyright there lies with you, regardless that you got the idea from me, because copyright does not protect ideas. It protects the manifestation of the idea. So if I had the song written out or the lyrics written out, then yes, the copyright is mine and you copied from me. So how am I looking back to this story is that he had a pitch for Mr. Mueng had a pitch for a show. The first thing that we need to decide is that was his written proposal enough for it to be protected in copyright, i.e. as a literary work, or because this idea was for a TV show, it would have only been protected if he actually shot a pilot or shot some sort of a few episodes, then there would have been the shooting of the episodes would have been the manifestation of his idea. And if Somizi came by 2020 and did it, then it would be a different story. So now we have two things. Was the actual proposal, would it be considered work in terms of copyright? And secondly, did Somizi's show actually come directly from those emails itself? But yeah.
I find it interesting because, of course, for Hastings to do the show, he needed Somizi. He wanted the show to be done with Somizi. So yeah, it would have been impossible for him to manifest it without Somizi. But isn't a concept, because every show, a movie, a drama series, a talk show, starts with a script. It starts with a concept.
Yeah.
And when does manifestation start? You are saying the song lyrics, if you've written them, you can prove that you've got a show, a song. Isn't this the same, that once you write the concept, and we all know, you know, you write to people, you say, I want to collaborate with you and let's take it to market. Isn't the concept itself a manifestation? It was no longer an idea of people sitting, you know, in some restaurant or public place and saying, what if we did this? And everybody went away and nobody did anything about it. He took it to as far as he could take it, to a point where he sent it to him. You know, so for me, it sounds like song lyrics. Why is that different?
Okay. So I like the question. here, you're absolutely correct He took it as far as anyone could in terms of a concept of a show. But now I think there's also going to be a distinction between TV formats and the actual script of the show. So in terms of like cooking shows, especially cooking shows that are driven by celebrities, right? So you know that there's only a type of way or a type of format in which a show can run. So in terms of cooking show, you'd have your intro, the celebrity introduces their friend or their guest, they cook whatever meal, they have a conversation, they eat, they close the show. So when you're saying that, okay, this is how you're running your show, and it just so happens that he has Somizi's name, is it actually original, or was that idea in itself just commonplace? It just so happens that the proposal had Somizi, then Somizi hosted a show like that 5 years later. My question here would be, would the story still be similar if the proposal was submitted with Dinuko's name and I happened to have an exact same show 5 years later, right? So now you have to look at, was it actually original, or was it just flowing from an ordinary cooking show? I think that's also something that if legal action is being pursued, that is also something that will be looked into.
Yeah, you do answer like a lawyer. You said a lot of intelligent things, but for me, I just want to know who's wrong. you know, and I guess I'm asking because it seems very odd, especially when Somizi says, yes, I remember talking to him, but I didn't think I wanted to do the show. But then I was going to do my YouTube and then the show came about. I find, and then when you now add this thing of I've spent 5 years for not opening emails, I'm like, whoa, you know, this is as clear as mud. Yeah. If we establish that there is, and I'm going to use a legal term to impress you and Tinyiko, there is probable cause that, you know, his ideas were used maybe by the producers, etc. Because there are some uniqueness of host other people who come and talk to you. It's a talk cooking show kind of a thing.
Yes. So
I can see how people could say, it's not only a cooking show. There are unique features around it who are so similar that we don't think that two people could have come up with these things.
Yes, yes.
What are the ways in which something like this can be solved, where there is proof that, you know, a song or a show in this case, and we then sit there and we say, no, we do believe that the similarities are so uncanny that you did use, or your managers, as they were reading your emails, may have read this email, and when they did your idea, they may have used his idea. And I'm thinking about Mr. Please Call Me. From Vodacom, where he's asking for a lot of money and the case seems to be dragging. How can this be resolved if we prove that, or this guy, Mr. Muyeng, proves that no, something went down? What can be done? What can he expect?
So there's always the case that they can settle it between privately, between himself, Somizi, and the channel. If not, he could sue for infringement in a court of law, and that's when they would actually test whether are they so similar together that Somizi's show is actually based on his idea, and from there he could get damages. Also, they would also need to reference him as the originator, or I guess not producer, but as an originator of the idea, because in copyright also you can get financial gain from it, but also the moral side of it is that when somebody uses your work, they need to say it comes from you. So those are the two things that could happen. But there are also other things that could happen outside of the law. The channel could also decide to stop airing the show, but this is just speculation for now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you are basically saying, look, listen, there are ways in which they could come to some form of an agreement together. I personally hope that they do, because I think the kind of, and I'm just speaking as somebody who values social justice, I think that even for somebody like Somizi, whichever way, you know, the emails were read and not read, it would be big of him and his brand to come to, you know, some form of settlement. But what are some of the advice that you would give a lot of entrepreneurs, young people, women? And I ask this because this is also a feminist podcast. So I don't know if you would even have an answer for this. And Dinyiko, you may come in. Many women speak about giving so much support to men who will be writing ideas, you know, oh, love, read this. Oh, love, oh, help me with this. And hey, you are helping. The next thing, the person like you, Mpo, you are reading towards a master's, or you completed your master's, you leave poor Dinyiko, who has been reading your manuscripts, correcting your English, How do we protect ourselves?
Okay. So most of the time, especially when you're doing work, when you're producing new work, I would suggest that getting a lawyer involved for a very comprehensive NDA would give some sort of protection, because I don't think an NDA is also the end all and be all in how to solve this, because there's always loopholes in law, or there's always ways in which people find to violate NDAs or find new strategic ways to actually still take your idea and run with it. And that's the sad reality about the creative world. But ideally is when you have an idea, work on it as closely as possible with yourself or people that you trust. And when you're ready to launch, you launch it. Those are the two things. I try to keep the idea to yourself. When you're trying to go get investors or trying to collaborate, have agreements in place that people cannot take your idea and utilize it.
Yeah, and a lawyer. Tinyiko, did you want to come in?
Yeah, so to answer your question, if you're in an acronym kind of situation, and for those who might not get the reference, that Tyler Perry movie where the guy was essentially just tinkering on his battery for 20 odd years while his wife was working, cooking, doing everything basically. You know, in that situation, what is best for you to do is get a partnership agreement signed before anything, because you're also investing your time, and you know you're investing your time, not because, not only because, oh no, but I love this person and, you know, so I just want to help them. There is also that intention of me helping this person is me helping us, you know. So yes, you might think that this us will be forever, and it very well could be an us that is forever. But the us could also not be forever, or the person could change up on you and you didn't expect it. So for any such situation, if it does arise, at least you're protected to say that while you were busy working on the idea side of things, I made sure that your environment allowed you to flourish, you know, or while you were just churning out whatever is in your mind, I made sure that it read properly so that other people could get the message that you're bringing out, you know, so that when you approach investors, letting them know that you have a partner. Not, yeah, I'm just coming with my idea and that's it. No, I'm coming with our, product, not just my product, so that we both benefit. And there are no fights in the long run where someone can be like, yeah, well, but I was busy with this on my own, forgetting that you could not have succeeded without my input in whatever it is you were working on.
That sounds like something that we need to consider, because I think, and like I always say, where love is concerned, there are so many mistakes that we can make. And as you say, when we are all happy, we are fine. But when things start going wrong, we find ourselves in different circumstances where one party is so bitter that they walk away with very little. And I think that for me is what makes this conversation very, very important. But I think it also speaks about ethics. And I think Mpo had mentioned it earlier, you know, that there's also the ethics of saying, look, we recognize that this is something that you contributed in or you created. Now, another area of law that you also spoke about, Mpo, is that of a trademark. And a trademark is something like a logo, the look and feel, you know, we know, for an example, when you say Nike, we know what you're talking about. When that swish comes, you identify so closely to Nike. And we have seen that there has been instances both locally and internationally where trademark law has come into place, Why is trademark law important, Mpo?
Trademark law is important to protect the value or to protect your brand. So it's there to do two things: to distinguish yourself from your competitors, and also to protect it from somebody else from trying to copy or go off your own goodwill by creating a logo or a slogan that is closely or similar to yours. So it's ideally just for the protection of your brand.
And for an example, with the example where Connie Ferguson was sued by Nivea, could the argument be made by saying that if your lotions resembles, you know, the bottle that is known to be like the look and feel for Nivea, are they saying that you are going to be profiteering from the hard work that they have put in creating their brand? Is that why your brand and your logo needs to be protected?
Yes, yes. Yeah, no, essentially that's it. So in trademarks, that would be called passing off. So it'll be, in this particular example, person B would be passing off their product to look like person A. So in order for person A to sue, obviously they would also have to have goodwill or a reputation in public. So that, yeah, you're perfectly correct when you're saying that they would be using another person's goodwill to sell off their products.
Okay. Now, just this morning, I saw on social media, again, Instagram, somebody advertising their neon tracksuits, activewear. And they were saying this is where you order, etc. They looked very interesting. In fact, the reason why I looked, I wondered whether people will want to buy them and wear them. And there were a lot of comments underneath there. And a number of people were saying, well, this is what this is the first person who did it, you know? So people started tagging and they kept on saying, please don't buy from this guy who's advertised, buy from this person because they are the one who came with the original idea. And in fact, when I clicked on that, even the advert that they had done was just so similar, you know? And people started saying, oh, no, yeah, I saw the initial one. I thought they worked together. The other one was saying, no, 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 no. They went to the same company to create the tracksuits for themselves. It seemed to be so muddy. And I don't even know whether it's trademark, except that I guess I'm thinking it's trademark because the tracksuits were so uniquely the same. You know, in fact, if people did not tag, the advert was also so similar. I would have thought it's the same person. I wouldn't have known it's two different people. What do these young people then do? Where do they go to? Because you can see that particularly on Instagram, people are creating and they are advertising, they are putting their things out there for people to consume. How do people create and protect their trademark?
Okay. So in terms of like a clothing brand, so the name of the clothing brand store, let's call it Orange, right? So the term Orange for your clothing brand, that would be your trademark. So in order to protect your trademark, you apply for a trademark at the trademarks office. I think it's under CIPC, situated in Pretoria. You can do it online. So once you do that and another person uses your name for their business, you can take out your certificate from the trademarks office and say, could you please stop using this name? This is my trademark and here's proof of it. But in terms of clothing goes deeper than just the name. So I know that when you say they're looking similar, I'm guessing you're talking about the patterns and how generally the clothing looks. Is that what you're saying by they're similar?
Everything, including the advert. You know, in the advert, there's different people standing almost like in a line, and they talk, and as they turn, you can see, you know, as they walk, they look like lines, neon lines are walking.
Is different from the clothing, though. Just the costume of the advert. Yes, but then it's still different from what. So that would be copying of the idea of how the advert must look, right? And because it's a production, that would probably fall under copyright. And Isaac, okay, you can correct me if I'm wrong with regards to the adverts. But with regards to the clothing, it's a different situation, and that's now where trademarks come in, and it becomes tricky.
Yeah. So
especially continue.
Let me try to distinguish. So, like, in terms of clothing, let's say, for example, you have a shirt, I have a shirt. The shirts have patterns, right? So you could try and protect the pattern on your shirt, or let's say there's a picture of me on a plain white shirt, right? So I can't protect the T-shirt itself, but I can protect the picture via copyright. So the reason why clothing themselves are not necessarily protected under copyright or under intellectual property per se is that the law views clothes as being utilitarian. So that just means that they're useful. You use clothes to cover up. So you can't have a monopoly on covering up. But if you put add-ons like pictures or like some
neon things.
Yes. Okay. So that if that is considered to be brand new, then there could be a case there. But I'm trying to distinguish that the tracksuit itself, I don't think that's where the protection lies. But like the decorations of, because I haven't seen this advert, but I guess the decorations of the neon lights or anything, if it's novel and new, then there should be some sort of protection there, but not necessarily for the tracksuits themselves.
Okay, but the neon design, the glow-in-the-dark design.
Just to clarify, if the entire tracksuit is neon, there's no protection of it because it's just a color. You can't protect a color. But if the tracksuit, for instance, let's say it's an Adidas tracksuit, right? And it has neon stripes. You know how we identify Adidas by knowing that it has white stripes. So let's say in this world, the version of Adidas is it has neon green stripes. So if that's what the tracksuit has, it has neon green stripes, and the other tracksuit also has neon green stripes positioned like the Adidas ones, that's when there's an infringement of the trademark. But if the entire tracksuit is green, then there's nothing new, green neon, there's nothing new about that. And you just have to battle it out for which shop do they like. But on the side of the advert, that's a different story, dependent on whose concept it really is.
Yeah, so I am saying that what was novel about them was the fact that they put the neon almost like design. The neon design is at the same places. So it's not like the entire thing. It's a design thing that distinguishes them. And even in the way that they have advertised it, they distinguish them that way. But I guess what you guys are saying, which I find quite remarkable, is the fact that many of us who are creative may not know any of these laws. Where do people go to learn about some of these things? Because I'm sure the first young person who developed these tracks, who's just developed them and marketed them, and did not even know that they would be able to, like somebody else is going to do them and market them as well. Where do people go if they've got something as novel as, you know, the creation of this design on tracksuits? How do you protect yourself? I know you say you register your trademark, But is there a place where you can have people check for you if it's being infringed upon? How do people ever find out? I can understand that Nivea is big, can find out when Connie Ferguson, you know, advertises her lotion. But yeah, for me, who's just doing it in my back room, I'm very small. Where do I go to know whether or not my trademark has been infringed upon?
Yeah, so unfortunately, this is the part where I guess having finances works on your favor. Because as far as I know, I don't think we do have legal clinics that solely speak on creatives. But ideally is to consult with an IP lawyer. And IP lawyers are most of the time, they're not on the cheap
side. They are what?
They're not cheap.
They're very expensive.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for me, I think you should know the basics, at least know the basics. So I would say camp on the CIP website, just search on their website, what is a trademark, what is a copyright, what is a patent, what is a design. They give you very snippet on their website, on their website on what exactly does each branch of the each branch of intellectual property protects and what do you need for protection. From there, at least you'd have a foundation that, oh, in order for me to protect my book, for instance, a copyright, I just need to write the book and that's how it gets protected. For a trademark, obviously there's different types of requirements for it. But if you need more nuance or advice, then you'd have to go see an attorney to get that specialized advice. Yeah.
Shouldn't the Department of Arts be offering some of this advice and maybe trade and industry? I'm asking because, or even the National Youth Development Agency. I'm asking because, number one, you said these laws are there to support innovation. And I guess a number of these entrepreneurs are very small. Some of them are doing this work without any financial backing. And it seems as if it's only big companies that can protect their trademark and intellectual property. But how do we then, on one hand, speak about supporting innovation? And on another, we are just not making even, you know, access to the law when they think that, you know, firstly to learn about the different aspects of the law, but also to protect their intellectual property. What are your views? How could we improve this to make this accessible to everybody, particularly young innovators who may not have money to afford big lawyers?
You're completely right. There should be more driven campaigns to create awareness, especially amongst creatives, about how the legal side of the creative industry works and how can they protect themselves from it. There isn't a lot of legal intellectual property workshops that I do know of that are particularly for creatives, but I feel like those type of forums, if they were more visible or there are more of them, that would make it easier. I think also trying to spread the information out there, my way of doing it is through my blog, where I try to break down legal intellectual property concepts down, but that's just like one expert for it. But we need like a bigger player or bigger stakeholder to try and drive that type of conversation so that it becomes more of a more commonplace conversations amongst creatives. And it shouldn't be a conversation that we're always having when somebody is infringing on another person's work. So I think you're completely right. We should have more initiatives that just drive the legal education behind the creative system or innovation in South Africa, because it would make it would empower up and coming creatives and innovators to know how to tread carefully when they're trying to launch their product or secure funding for their product or idea without actually losing out on the work that they've put in.
It sounds like you are doing such important work. I was about to say, have you sent emails to people with this idea? But I'm just like thinking, oh, maybe that's not how you do it, because number one, people don't read emails for years. But secondly, maybe somebody will run with it. So I'm not the right person to give you advice on this. But maybe, Mpho, you can just give us the name of your blog and share it with us, so that at least for the work that you are doing, we could direct people who are interested to, you know, your blog to understand some aspects of the law. Do you mind giving your blog to us?
No, I don't mind. My blog is on Medium, so people can just type into the internet Medium, Mpho Gama, then my page will show up there.
Okay, so they go to Medium.
Medium.com. Medium.com. Then once they are in the website, they can search Mpho Gama, and yeah, they will find me there.
Okay. Great, Mpho. And you are really doing an amazing job. Any last words on this issue, Tinyeko, and what are some of maybe a few do's and don'ts that you would like to advise our audiences about?
Just people shouldn't buy into the rhetoric that NDAs make people afraid to work with you, because ultimately, anyone who doesn't want to sign an NDA should be flashing red lights for you, because why do they want to hear your idea without signing a document that at least says, even if you don't take up my idea, you're not going to use it in a different space with someone else, you know, because it's something that you ultimately intend to make money off. So people should get out of this culture of saying that NDAs are a bad thing, because all you're doing is facilitating a culture of exploitation. And if it's not exploitation, you are, what's the word? You're hamping down on creativity, because the people with the ideas then don't want to share the ideas, because it's either you're not going to want to listen because they want to protect themselves, or you're going to steal the ideas if they do protect themselves. And also people should, you know, do extensive research on the legal side of everything that they want to undertake, you know. So if you want to go into music, before you even go and give someone your song and you record that song, do some research about the legal side of your music, so that you can avoid situations that we keep hearing about less fortunate musicians saying that they hear their songs being played by the more famous artists in South Africa. So that would be a way to protect yourself, you know, without having to make it a battle, because you know beforehand that if you hear this, you can say, I have a claim and I can prove it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that issue around songs makes me so sad, because a number of people who are really talented, either as songwriters or just musicians all around, some come from very desperate situations, and they come into big cities and they meet these big names and they hand over their livelihoods. You know, somebody says to you, I'm going to buy you this, I'm going to buy you that, I'm going to put you up in a hotel, you've never been in a hotel before, I'm going to do this for you. You know, people use all sorts of, I want to say snake oil, you know, on you, where they are charming. They are, wow, you see lights, camera, action, and you see yourself in you know, your name's written in billboards, and that's all the things that they promise. I must repeat, I wish the Department of Arts and Culture, Sports, Arts and Culture, whatever it's called right now, could really take this up. We do need the work that is done by you and people like Mpho out there. where people, even when they come into Johannesburg, even when they apply for funding from a number of these funding agencies, can actually get somebody who's a lawyer sitting down with them and say, before you drop your demo with so-and-so, before you do this, need, you know, these are the things that you need. And an NDA, just so that everybody understands what we are talking about, it's a non-disclosure agreement. An agreement where if you give somebody your idea, your proposal, they agree that even if they are not going to work with it, on it with you, they basically are not going to use it or use it with somebody else. And that is what even Mpho was saying with Mr. Mueng, that if he had signed this non-disclosure agreement with Somizi, or even as he sent, you know, the emails that were not read for 5 years, he should have, you know, included a non-disclosure agreement that says, this is my idea. It's fine if you're not going to use it, but don't use it with somebody else. This has been such an education. And yeah, if you want to know more, please visit medium.com and search for Mpho Gama, who is writing and advising people around this aspect of the law, which seems so distant, but unfortunately affects so many people who've got ideas. And on that note, I want to say thank you and for everything, Mpho. You've really educated us. We will watch the cooking show with keen interest to see why, you know, how it's resolved. And I do hope that for the benefit of everyone, that there is a kind of settlement that is reached before people have to go and spend a lot of money with lawyers. And to you as well, Tinyiko, thank you so much for bringing so much of these ideas and also your expertise on this. So on that note, goodbye, everyone.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
If you want to give us feedback on the podcast, or you have a legal or finance matter that you would like some advice or assistance on, you can reach us via WhatsApp only or a voice note on 061-535-4623 or via email on zangazulugirl@gmail.com. We will try to share information with you, and where possible, Tinyiko, who is a legal expert, will give you some advice on how to deal with your matter. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter using the handle @whatslove_podcast. And you can also find us on Facebook on What's Love Podcast.
Please note that the views expressed in this podcast do not represent the views of the Seoul City Institute for Social Justice.